Okay, we're on lesson 39, Romans 5 through 12. Our handout, page 7. Last time we said in verse 12, and thus death spread to all men because all sinned. And we decided that that Paul is declaring all have sinned, that is in Adam's first sin as mankind's federal head. Death, original sin, touches every individual in the human family as the penalty they deserve. And then we said, we finished with, now one would have expected the apostle to finish his sentence like this. Even so, by one man, righteousness has entered the world and life by righteousness. And then number 3 is, but instead, Paul digressed for the next 5 verses to illustrate the important statement of Romans 5:12. And it's only when he gets to Romans 5:18 that he finishes his comparison. And I have a note here to compare the 3 verses. So let's read the 3 verses. 12, 13, and 14? Yeah. So wherefore is by one man sin entered the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. And then he says, for until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. And then he goes... on 14, nevertheless, he talks about death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over them that had sinned not after the similitude of Adam's transgression. And then he said in 15, but not as the offense, so also is the free gift. For through the offense of one, many be dead. Much more the grace of God and the gift of grace, which is by one man, Jesus, has abounded unto many. Then in 16, and not as it was by one that sinned, so is the gift for the judgment. And then he says, for by one man's offense, he does it again. Death reigned by one, much more that they will receive the abundance of grace and the gift of. And then, in verse 18, he finally says, therefore, because of everything I just said, he says, as by the offense of one judgment came upon all men to condemnation, even so the righteousness of the free gift came upon all men unto justification of life. Those verses all were for the benefit of Paul expounding on verse 12. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. Jude, come on and pass this out. You grab this off the table here, and you guys can pass this out here, and we get on page 8. So in other words, what he's saying is those verses were, a matter of fact, what version Bible do you have? What's the version?
New King James.
Okay, is verse 13 in parentheses?
No.
ESV is.
It's in parentheses, right? Yeah.
It's not in mine.
No?
No. Oh, ESV? I don't. I have the ESV. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Mine's not in parentheses.
What do you have?
This one's the ESV.
Yours and
Genesis?
No.
I want to see what, just for the sake, what that is.
I have so many different.
I think, if memory serves me correctly, I haven't looked at it in a while. It means that this was added to the text for understanding.
You're talking 513, right?
Yeah, 513. I know it means something, and I just can't remember what it is.
Italics is usually a distinction for something that's added to make
context. Yeah, yeah. I can't find it right now.
Mine's in parentheses through 17.
What is it?
13 through 17 is it?
13 through 17?
That's not added for... I don't believe that is added.
No, I don't think so either, because it's in all the versions.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what it is, but it's there's a reason why it's there, and
an attempt at trying to make all sentences work.
Oh, there you go. It's an attempt to make all the sentences work, yeah, to come together.
Paul didn't exactly follow English grammar.
No. All right, let's look at verse 13. The first section of the verse reads, "For until the law, sin was in the world." The term, for until the law, refers to the law given by Moses, and the context is that before Moses, mankind was under an active divine law. Let's look at Genesis 6, 5, and 6. Anne Marie, Genesis 6, 5, and 6.
Okay. Is this one? The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him to his heart.
Okay, so we know that if God said that, then men were breaking the law. And although there was no law given, there was a law. Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself. So we see that, right? Number two, the apparent reason why Paul referred to this period between Adam and the law was to demonstrate the exceeding grace of God in the gospel, abounding and superabounding as a complete remedy for all the evils introduced by sin. What are some of the evils, when you think about it, what are some of the evils that sin, and what is sin, by the way? What's the Bible, what's the biblical definition of sin?
Separation.
Anything
from
not
God.
Separation. Rejection of God's law.
Rebellion.
Sort of.
Rebellion.
Separation.
The transgression. Okay. That's the word. One of the things you have to learn about absolute truth is this. Absolute truth cannot be fooled with. In other words, you can't add to it. You can't use another word. You have to use it as it is because that's the whole point of it being absolute. If it's absolute, then that's the way it is and it shouldn't be any other way. And the word transgression means that it means disobedience. It means rejecting God. It means all of that stuff. But the word transgression also means treason. It means that somebody has done something that is equivalent to treason. For example, I say that because God is sovereign, right? What does sovereign mean? Take a shot, Tom. I don't even want to.
In charge of everything.
Boom! There's no one else. He is sovereign over everything, and the word sovereign means there can only be one. To be truly sovereign. I mean, some people say, you know, West Germany is a sovereign nation. Well, it's only sovereign as long as Russia doesn't invade it, right? Nobody's going to invade God. Nobody's going to take his sovereignty away from him. So he is the sovereign. And being sovereign means, okay, that it's like the United States. We are a sovereign country. And if somebody commits treason against America, right, that's what we call it. In other words, if they sell secrets or they give it comfort to the enemy or whatever it is, it's treason. Well, the same thing happens to God because he's sovereign. When you disobey him, we look at God as, well, this kindly old man sitting up in heaven and he forgives us and his son died for us. But he's the sovereign God. And when you commit a sin, you trespass against him and his sovereignty. And that's why the penalty is death, even if you did it one time. So we have to understand that that when you're dealing with sovereignty, something has to be paid for when you transgress that law, and we see that in Genesis 6, 5, and 6, that verse we just that we just read. It says. And so that being said, what are some of the remedies for the sin? What are some of the sins that have infected our world? Even just starting out in our lifetime. What sins?
Pride.
No, that's always been around.
Covetousness, oh, monies.
Pride, all that stuff. That's really the devil's bread and butter. I hate to put it that way, but it is. You know, pride and money and power, that's all the devil's bread and butter. That's been around forever. I'm talking about what now do we see the ravages of sin in our culture right now?
Demoralization of men, you know, what's going on.
You're talking about...
homosexuality.
Immorality.
Immorality is
okay.
Exciting.
Exactly. We see that. We see, you know what? I grew up when Leave It to Beaver was on, and that's how people lived.
There's
okay?
more witches in the U.S. than there's ever been.
Oh, no, I know that, yeah. So what I'm saying is the immorality of America, and not just so much even in witchcraft and these other evil things, but in the culture itself. Sin has so... Look at the church. Look at the church over the last hundred years.
Yeah, do you think there's any less divorces or abortions amongst the church than there is amongst the rest of America?
But when he says that, he has to confine that comment to the unbelieving church or the 21st century evangelical church. That is, anybody who possesses a cross, a building, and a Bible, that they call themselves a Christian. That's true. But in the believing church, it isn't true. So the morality is one of the sins that really have infected us. What's another one? I'm just thinking of a couple of big ones. Yeah.
Kind of an offshoot of that is humanism, where humans are considered to be good.
But that was always around.
But now it's like everyone's good. You're okay, I'm okay. And we don't need a religion. We can kind of just get along.
Well, that's only if you're a Democrat. No. No, that's not true. If you're not a Democrat, man, you're not okay. Especially if you start talking to stuff, right? Yeah.
Gender.
That's immorality. Yeah.
You know, like boys.
People want to be non-gender specific. Don't give out the birth certificate using the biological gender. Wait until they're 12 years old so they can choose.
Well, yeah.
Give me a break.
Calling evil good and good evil.
There you go. But that's that. No, you guys. Yeah.
In the pulpit, the dumbing down the word of God and his sovereignty.
But that's all in the New Testament too, right? Mm-hmm. There was liars and wolves and hirelings in the pulpit, right? Mm-hmm. And what you said, it's all, there's something going on in our generation that's the evil of evils.
Abortion?
The internet! Duh! Literally. The internet! You talk about evil. Right? Anything goes. You know, they call it the Wild West. They don't call it that for no reason. It is the Wild West. Anything goes. So that's one thing. The internet. What's another thing? That's the kind of stuff I'm looking for. Yeah.
Just a general lack of respect for each other.
Yeah, I put that under immoral because that's an immoral thing to not respect people.
Correctness too, not being able to say freedom of speech, you're trying to slowly take that away with political correctness.
Yeah, that's an immoral thing. See, what I'm thinking about is I'm thinking about the internet, I'm thinking about cell phones, I'm thinking about technology in general. That is the big evil of today. Why? Because it's unrestricted. There's no boundaries. Oh, you know, some of them say, well, we're going to kick you off the internet if you do this or you do that. That's not what I'm talking about. They allow things on the internet that you'd never see it before. How about television? How about television? How about at 8:30 watching television with your sons, and Victoria's Secret's models come running out on the runway with a dog? I mean, what about that? Right? Right? So it's like in the century we live in now, sin has evolved into something that permeates all of our lives. In the sense being that we all carry these little sin gadgets with us, right?
Even with music.
Music!
Words, you know, before there used to be love songs.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's all about, you know, almost hedonism in a lot of the songs.
Paganism.
Yeah.
This is a little evil device. Now, it can be good. This phone can be good. My phone is good. I can attest to that because it has no apps. Or it has just what I need to use the phone. But that's it. But evil is in our technology today, and it spreads worldwide. Yeah, you're laughing, so it's got to be.
Well, look at the logo for Apple. It's an apple.
I said that. When I first came here, I was given an Apple computer, and I looked at it, and I said to what was his name?
Eric.
I said, Eric, I can't have that computer. He said, why? I says, because it's got the apple on it, and there's a bite out of it. No, I ain't taking it. He says, well, you don't have to worry about viruses. No, but I have to worry about evil. That's a picture of evil. He said, you're in mud. I said, okay. But anyway, the point is that we have... No, I know, but it's... It could have been a pomegranate. Could have been an avocado. We don't know, right? So what I'm trying to say to you is... What I'm trying to say to you is that in our handout here, he's talking about the gospel abounding and superabounding as a complete remedy for all the evils introduced by sin. And everything we just talked about is the new evils. These are new evils. These weren't around 20 years ago. There was no internet back in 1987. I saw, it was Good Morning America. One person said to another person, "What's the internet?" And it wasn't around. So this is a new evil. And I got to tell you, if you have children today, you really should be very careful about using that, because I'll give you an example. I was down my brother several years ago, and I was running an auction on eBay, and I was in a hurry. So I said, "Can I use your computer?" He said, "Okay." So I type in eGay, G-A-Y, instead of E-B-A-Y, right? All of a sudden, the screen lights up with all these things that I didn't really want to see. So I click it off, right? I said, "Oh, I can't believe that," right? So I went and I got my eBay back on, and everything went right. So 2 days later, my brother comes up to me and he says, "You know, is there something you want to tell me? Is there something you want to tell your little brother?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You can't believe all the whatever you call them, all the stuff I got on from gay get websites. What'd you do?" And I told him what I did, and he cracked up. It was like, I had no idea, but that's what happens. That goes to show you.
Tell me that Google doesn't watch what you
type
in.
Yeah, no, they do. But that's what I'm trying to tell you about the new evils. These are all new evils. They're with us a little while now, but they're relatively new. And even through them, the gospel of Jesus Christ superabounds through it. And let's find out how. Number three, to demonstrate this truth, that is, that the complete remedy for all evils is the gospel, Paul introduces three different periods where people sinned and the effects of sin were seen. And in all three different periods, the grace of the gospel superabounded. The first period was with Adam's sin and the ills that followed sin. Romans 5:12. Let's go back to Romans 5:12. And Connor, read Romans 5:12. Just give me a second to catch up to you.
Okay.
Romans 5:12. We just got through reading.
All right. Ready?
Yep.
"Therefore, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sin."
Okay. So this is Adam's sin by one man. That's who he's talking about. Number one. The results of Adam's sin were met by the death of Christ. Romans 5:15 through 18. Carrie.
"But the free gift is not like a trespass, for if many die through one man's trespass, much more have the grace of God and the free gift by the grace of that one man, Jesus Christ, abounded for many. And the free gift is not like the result of that one man's sin, for the judgment found one trespass brought condemnation, but the free gift found in many trespasses brought justification. For if because one man's trespass death reigned through that one man, much more will those who receive the abundance of grace and the free gift of righteousness reign in the life through the one man, Jesus Christ."
Oh, hath abounded unto many, right? You don't have that? Okay. So we see there that the Adam's sin was met by the and the results of Adam's sin were met by the death of Christ. And we see that in those verses, that Christ, one man, and that's the resemblance between Adam. And sometimes Christ is called the second Adam, and not so much because he resembles him in that regard, but because they are both federal heads. Adam was the first federal head of mankind, and Jesus is the first federal head of mankind as God. So they're both federal heads, so they resemble each other in the regard that they both have a major effect on mankind. And that's what these verses are telling us. That by one man, sin came into the world, but by one man, grace abounded, and that was through Jesus Christ. That second period was that long interval between Adam and Moses. Somebody did the math and said it was about 2,500 years. This was a fair representation of the condition of the world without revelation and without law. What does that mean, without revelation and without the law? I want to make sure everybody gets this. This is really fascinating stuff. I've been working on it all day. It's not this, but I'm the end part of this. It's really great stuff. What does it mean? What does it mean that representation without revelation? What is revelation? He made himself known to Adam and Eve, right? He walked with them. He told them what the one command that they had to do, right? And what's the law?
Ten Commandments.
And without the law. Okay, read Romans 13 and 14, Jerry.
For sin indeed was in the world before the law was given, but sin is not counted where there is no law. Yet death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those whose sinning was not like the transgression of Adam, who was a type of the one who was to come.
Okay, so we see that there was a fair representation. It's talking about until the law was sin in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, so we know there was a law because people died. That's what he's saying. In other words, after Adam, there was no law. For 2,500 years, the only law there was the law that was written on man's heart. I told you before, an easy way to understand this is when God made man, he made a place for him in his heart. And when man deserted God, Adam committed treason against God, God separated himself from man, and in place of God, men have sensed that. Since then, tried to fill that void in their life with everything that you can imagine, to try to get that peace and that joy that only you get from God. But those Ten Commandments are ingrained as a natural state in all men. And we know it because Romans 1, 19 and 20 tells us that there's no excuse, for what is known of God is seen, is revealed. Now, Andrew and I had a little talk before class about, how could somebody see it? And I said to him, it's either A, an evangelist is sent there, and there's been evangelists ever since the New Testament began, right? And, or, what was the other way, Andrew?
Through not recognizing in the law their heart are justified by the righteousness.
There are people that were unsaved, and what's that verse? It's in the, you Romans, showed that when they have... give us what it is so we can write it, so we can read it. It's Romans 2:14. Read 2:14.
For when the Gentiles which have not the law...
Excuse me, 14 and 15.
Do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness in their thoughts, meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another.
Boom. So although they may not know those Ten Commandments, there are Gentiles. It's called the natural ethics theology. Natural ethics theology. In other words, they may not know what the written law is, but the law of God, or let me just say it a different way, the morality of God is written on everybody's heart. And I told you that every civilization, we know it's true because every civilization that lasts for any length of time and is really a culture, they have to have that law written on their heart or they could not exist. If you want to know what it's like to not kill, it says thou shalt not kill, right? Go to Somalia. The place is run by warlords and there is no law. It's lawless. And you go there at great risk to yourself, okay? That's why the culture there is almost non-existent. It's more like they're like tribes. But in every other culture, those laws are written on all of men's hearts. Stealing. It's not, everybody knows. You don't have to, you could go to China and they may never heard of Christ, but they know stealing is wrong. They know murder is wrong. They know that committing adultery is wrong. And although they never heard of Christ, and what that verse is that Andrew just read to you is that when they do that, okay, that's the natural law or the natural ethic law that applies to them. Now, if they don't do that, and there's many that don't do that, well, then they're lost. then they are, they will be judged. They will be judged. And it's in a, it's in a chapter 2, verse 12. Go ahead and read chapter 2, verse 12, Pete. And here's what happens. Here's how the judgment of that works. He's talking about people. He's talking about people that do not have a law. Read it.
For as many as have sinned without the law also perish without the law, and as many as have sinned in the law will be judged by the law.
Okay, get it? Everybody see that? You see the two things? Yeah, Doreen.
Was the morality of God written on Adam and Eve's heart?
No, he told them.
He told them.
He told him. He said right out.
He didn't have to write it anymore.
No.
Right.
So,
okay.
Right?
Well, when...
He didn't know good from evil yet. They hadn't eaten of the tree of good and evil yet.
No, but that's why they had free will. Because they weren't influenced by evil in Genesis 1 and 2. And they weren't influenced by God in 1 and 2. They were just perfect. You got to remember that. They were perfect in everything. So when God said don't eat it, they had the will to either do it or not do it without having the influence of the devil or really the influence of God, and they made that choice. We, on the other hand, come into this world with the sin nature, and that sin, as soon as we're old enough to understand sin, that sin nature is activated, and we sin, and at that moment we are under the influence of evil, of the devil. If we get saved, We still don't have a free will. We have free choice, because now we know evil because we before we were saved, and we know good. We know what God's laws are, and because we know both, when a situation comes up in our life, we can choose to either do good or to choose to do evil. An unsaved person can't do that. They can only choose to do evil because they don't know the good. They know the moral, but they don't know the good. Whose hand up is up?
I was just going to make that direction back to when they ate of the tree of good and evil, they were equipped with that. That part became aware, mm-hmm. like it is in that described in chapter 2. He's taking it back to that point where they became aware by eating of the fruit.
Yep.
That conscience became lit.
Exactly. Well, actually, why did they run?
Right.
That's it. Why did they run? Because they knew. They were convicted of their sin. They ran because they knew what they did was wrong. And when you think about it, when somebody that's unsaved does something wrong, what is their main concern?
Going to get caught.
Boom. You're going to get caught. They may have some compassion on, if it's a victim, they may have some compassion on a victim saying, well, boy, gee, I wouldn't like it if somebody did that to me. And they feel a moral obligation, right? But that's it. Right, but what about if a saint does that? What about when you commit a sin? How do you react to it? You know it's a sin because the Bible tells you it's a sin. You know what a sin is because it burns in your heart because you were a sinner before you were a saint, and because you know that and you know what you did, who do you offend? God. The man who went to pray, ripped open his shirt, and he said, against you and only you have I sinned. Every sin that we commit, if it's against a person or not, is always a sin against God first. Why? Because it's his law. So if I commit a sin, if I take Jude's, he's got 10 bucks in his pocket, and he drops it, and I pick it up, and I take it, okay? I know what I did, okay? And although I have to give him back and ask him to forgive me, the one I've really offended first is God, because it's his law that says don't take his money. And we have to understand that. When you commit a sin against God, one second, when you commit a sin against God, you need to ask God to forgive you first, because it's him that's first offended, and then, of course, the victim is offended second. Yeah, Jude.
All right, so my friend Wyatt, I was watching him play Fortnite. V-Bucks, so what he did was he went into the store and bought $10 of V-Bucks against his mom. He did not care about the price or what he has to pay.
He used a credit card.
Yes.
Yeah.
Without her knowing.
Yeah.
Without who knowing?
Oh,
the mom.
Yeah.
It's my friend.
Yeah. Well, you know, that would be, well, I don't know that I call that stealing. I think I would call, I'm right, I might call it stealing. That's a tough one. Why don't you give me an easy one? That was a tough one. I don't know if that's either stealing or the fifth commandment, being disobedient to your parents. I mean, unless, let's just say this, if he was a Christian, what would you do? What was that?
They're throwing the book at him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's telling you.
Let me ask Jude a question. So Jude, what would you do if you took Dad's credit card and you used it? Kind of surprised that a guy in a convenience store would even do that. It shows you where his heart is. But but what would you do after you bought the gift? What do you think would happen after you spent $20 or $30 of your dad's money?
I'd get very much yelled at and never going right now ever again.
But, but let me ask you something. How would you feel about it?
Very sad.
Why?
Because
you got caught?
Yes.
Okay. No, that's true. And the reason is because, and here's the reason why we know that, okay? Because that's what we talk about when we say the age of accountability. That's what he would look at it as, and that's true, he would. But there'll come a point in time when he won't do that, when he'll look at it and he'll say, no, that was wrong to do and I offended God and I got to tell Dad I'm sorry. And he'll do that anyway, but because of his age and his understanding hasn't reached it. That's a good example of accountability. And so we need to understand that if as Christians, if we do something like that, then we feel convicted by, not that we got caught or we didn't get caught, we get convicted because we know we offended God. That's the difference. It isn't about getting caught. It's about offending somebody who has done so much for you. You got to always remember that backdrop. Everything in your life should be backdrop against that cross. In other words, that cross made everything in your life possible. All the joy you feel, all the comfort you get, the blessings that come into your life, even the opportunities to grow by suffering. All of that stuff is brought to you by God, and you have to look at all of that as a backdrop against whatever you do. It's a beautiful red backdrop, and every time you sin, it's a jet black sin against a beautiful red, blood red backdrop. And the reason that we have the Spirit within us is to help convict us. If you don't have the Spirit of God in you, you're not going to be convicted unless you get caught and you have to go to court, and it's a different kind of conviction. Everybody get it?
And it's a different kind of being caught, too, because we're caught as we think it. We're already caught.
Well, not as so much as you think it, as you entertain it. That's another thing. If Wyatt, whoever this guy is, this little kid is, if Wyatt just sat there and he was a believer and he's sitting there and he's saying, you know what, I got to think about how I can get some money from mom or dad without them knowing it, okay? He's committing a sin and he doesn't have to take it. How do we know that's true? What did Jesus talk about the mind and lusting after women? What did he say? He said, if you lust after a woman in your mind, you've already committed the act. In God's eyes, you've already done it. You don't have to do the act. So that's a parable that teaches us what we entertain in our mind is very important. And so for somebody that's saved, it's very important you understand the distinction between getting caught and feeling actual repentance and remorse for what you did. And I can tell you that I can only speak for myself, but before I was saved, I didn't have a lot of remorse for things. I didn't do a lot of bad things, but once in a while I did something that was a little unsavory, right? And I didn't feel any remorse for it. I didn't. I just didn't want to get caught for it. That's simple. But other than that, that's it. But when I got saved, altogether different. You know what got me? Is that I read the part that says, his eyes are on his elect. Everywhere. And you can't go nowhere and escape those eyes. And it's like, wow. So why would I try? Why would I try to get away with anything, right? It's so silly. But anyway, we just really went off the track with that one. Number two, we're talking about revelation without the law, the condition of the world. Number two, sin then reigned everywhere where there was no law, but the grace of the gospel abounded over all the evils, over the evils of this state of man. The third period was under the law, Romans 5:20. Jude, you're up. Well, there's not a lot of scriptures here, but it's just the idea, because we're building up to a certain point we're going to get to. Everybody following this? You following it, Stephen? Get it? Remember the two periods. Adam had a verbal command. Moses had the written command. And in between there was the law, the natural law that was written on all men's hearts. And Andrew and I were talking about that today, tonight. And we talked about there being people in that passage he read in Romans 2, that the Gentiles, when they do the things that are in the law, it becomes a law unto them. And what that means is that there are people in China and Russia and places where maybe the gospel has never been, that have that law on their heart, and they act on it. They act on that law. And to them, that is the law. And that's what God's going to judge them by.
The same way the Israelites didn't have Christ to know him the same way we do, but they followed the law.
Boom. Exactly what we're saying. Good example.
By faith.
Thank you. Good example. Yeah. Good example. Okay, let's see what we got over here.
I have a question about that. If then it does, for those people that haven't heard the gospel and they have that law in their heart, then doesn't that make it a works based?
No, because they don't end up keeping it anyway.
Okay, turn to Romans chapter 2, because we need to get it straight. Turn to Romans chapter 2. Verse 14. Go ahead and read it, Wendy.
For when Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do the things in the law, these, although not having the law, are a law to themselves.
And then he says about judgment in verse 12. Go ahead and read 12.
For as many as have sinned without law will also perish without law, and as many as have sinned in the law will be judged by the law.
Okay. So what he's saying here is that when somebody, it's a natural law, it's written on our hearts. When a Gentile who may not know the Ten Commandments and may never have seen the cross, when they live their life by that law that's written on their heart, okay, then what ends up happening is it's a law unto themselves. It's a natural law. It's the same way during the 2,500 years from Adam to Moses, when there was no law, the law was written on their hearts. They knew.
If you read 15 and 16, it actually really brings it together a little bit.
Okay. John, read 15 and 16.
Who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing
there
witness.
You go.
And between themselves their thoughts, accusing or else excusing them, in the day when God will judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ, according to my gospel.
Okay.
Yes, so, it's written on their hearts, but they break the law anyway. So that's why that a person who's never heard the law is held to the law, because they know it in their hearts.
Mm, exactly.
But all men will break the law, whether they know it or not.
What'd you say?
So,
Andrew, what'd you say?
No, he was saying that someone who's never heard the law will be held to the law. That's not at all what it's saying. They will not be held to the law.
They're held to the law in their heart.
No, what he's saying is that when they obey the law, okay, the law is God's law.
Yes.
Those that have the law in their heart and they don't obey it, then that's the same thing.
She was asking about work salvation, but it doesn't matter because these individuals are going to break that law anyway. So without
No, because there are some. There it says in the passage, Arthur. It says for as many. Where is it? For when the Gentiles, which have not 14, which shall not have the law, do by nature the things contained in the law.
Yeah.
In other words, what
then
he's saying.
It goes on to say that as many who have broken the law with the law have broken without the law.
Yeah, it's the same thing with believers. The same place where it's the same thing in the United States. The United States is one of the most heavily evangelized country in the world.
Her question was about.
Works.
Well, about work salvation.
It's a faith.
Gentile living by the law is still not going to get into heaven because they will have broken the law at some point. So without Christ, they're still condemned.
They don't have a law.
Yeah.
You're missing the point there.
The point is the law is written on the heart.
No, it's the law of conscience is what he's talking about. It's a separate law than the law
we're
of God.
We're going to get into this a little further.
They're
okay?
not going to get into heaven by living by that law, is the point. That law.
So the works, there's no work salvation, but the verse that we're reading here says that there are Gentiles, and that's the natural law that was written on their heart. And it's the same law that was written on the hearts of the people between Adam and Moses. Now, that being said,
Abraham had no law. He had faith, and he's in heaven without Jesus or without the law.
Right.
Great example of what a Gentile, because Abraham was a pagan. So we
exactly.
can't apply a different standard just because of the time you live.
Right.
It doesn't make sense.
Right.
The Christ's work on the cross is an example to anybody that lives by the conscience, which is also
mm-hmm.
the natural law of God. That's what that's saying.
Yes, I believe that. And so anyway, you understand? In other words, the natural law that's written on men's heart, it's like he said, there was no Christ for Abraham, there was no Christ for Noah, right?
Mm-hmm.
So and not only that,
or Adam and Eve.
Or who?
Adam and Eve.
No, but they had a verbal law. God told them, this is my commandment, don't eat.
Right.
Right? So that's a law.
Right.
And then that was the only one they had, and they broke it. And then from that, hard to believe, right? But then from then.
After they had the law.
Yeah.
Adam and Eve did have Christ because they were told about them, and they did believe in him coming, too.
What'd you say?
In Genesis 2, Genesis 3, it was God prophesied at that point about Christ, and Eve rejoiced that her
child. I don't remember that.
He will bite you. He will step on your.
That's Genesis 3.
Yeah.
Not 2.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying.
And I don't know that
and
Eve was rejoicing
when
he started.
When Eve had her children.
What
she
about?
Says, she says, "Here comes the path in which salvation will come." I can't remember the exact words.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I have to
about.
Find it.
All right. Well, let's just move on while you find it. Where was I? 1:9. Did you find it?
Not
my agenda. I think a good way, just to ever, because this is a very thick topic.
Yeah.
The secrets of men in verse 16 is a really important verse to point out. We don't know the heart of any person, especially those that lived 2,500 years ago.
Yeah.
But God knows everyone's intentions, even to their mind, as they're following their conscience. And that's what he's pointing out through Romans. He's not judging them by their works. He's judging them by their faith and how they approach their conscience. If they're not revealed to it, he's not going to hold them to it. But once they have the law, now they're responsible to what they know and what they're held to by their conscience. So their conscience expands with the law. That's why sin had got higher, which we learned in chapter 5, right? So
right. And not only that, you got to also remember he's talking about principles. When he's reading, this is doctrine, this is principles, okay? And in this principle, he's laying out the natural ethics theology of God's law being written on people's heart. That's why he goes back to Moses, and that's why he goes back to Adam, to distinguish that, to let everybody. And then, if you know, getting back to what we said before in Romans 1:19-20, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. So when you realize that, and you realize that there's a natural law in your heart, and you're obeying that, okay, then that's to your credit. Not everybody does it. The same way not everybody that calls themselves a Christian are really Christians. Joe.
Yeah, so I think I might be able to explain some of it. Like in 1983 when I was a police officer, there wasn't a law against domestic abuse.
Yes.
So I actually went to a call, as a young officer at the time with a veteran, we knock on the door, there was a complaint of a problem at the house. We go to the house, a woman answers the door, she's crying, she's upset, her husband's inside the house and he's, typical, bare belly with the tank top on, this is my house, get out of my house, nobody calls you here. So we said to the woman, did you call the police? And she was very sheepish and scared. And she said, no, I didn't call the police. And we knew that there was a problem going on in there. But my partner said, hey, Joe, it's their house. They're not making a complaint. We got to go. And I knew when I left there that was the wrong thing to do because there was a problem in the house. But since then, in Torrington, with the Tracy Thurman incident,
mm-hmm.
they made domestic abuse a law.
Yep.
So this guy was breaking a law. We couldn't enforce it because no one wanted to make a complaint at that time, but it was still wrong, and he still had to answer to God for his actions.
Yeah.
But now with the law, you're mandated to make the arrest, whether she wants to make a complaint or not. If you know that someone's being abused, you make that arrest. So now it's very clear, because that's what the law does. The law clarifies those things for you. But without the law, there's not much that we can do, but he's still accountable to God for what he does.
Exactly. And in the same way, somebody that, Gentile that obeys the natural law, okay, it's exactly the same thing. It is a law to them. And that's what it's saying, that it is a law to them, unto them. And that covers the people that, that lived during that 25, and I go back to that because that's what Paul's talking about, that 2,500 year period between Adam getting the verbal law and Moses giving us the written law. And there was a time when in those people, they were saved. There were the Old Testament's filled with people that were saved. And they didn't have that law, but they were still saved. And they were saved because they had that law written on their heart. And as soon as the law came out, and that's why Romans 1, 19 and 20 says, that's why they're without excuse. And it's their conscience too. I want to have you note that, that it's their conscience. How many times have we seen that both of them were, especially when we weren't saved, we all have a conscience. You know, one of the things that cause people who commit a crime, and that's another thing too. You commit a crime and it bothers you, it's because of your conscience. And
Adam,
there are a lot of,
Adam right away with hiding as he was naked. His conscience knew he was naked and he hid from God.
Exactly.
It's a clear indication he was already aware.
Yep.
And broke that covenant.
And that consciousness of it.
And that's what I'm trying to say here, is that the law that's written on our hearts to all men holds them guilty. It doesn't hold them innocent.
That's not true, though.
No.
Because Abraham would be guilty without...
But Abraham was found righteous by his faith.
Right.
So would everyone else be that's saved? Anyone that's saved
without the faith,
they aren't
saved.
But so Abraham was saved by faith, Noah was saved by faith.
And so was every Jew.
And so was every Gentile.
Yeah.
You're
yeah. Without the faith, there is no salvation.
Well, no, we're on
the
same
law,
page.
The
so
law
saying,
holds you guilty. The faith redeems you.
I'm still saying the same thing, but I think you're saying, if I'm not mistaken, Art, is that those that are not Jews, that were Gentiles, that didn't know the law, aren't saved because they're breaking the law, is what I heard you say. So I don't know.
Well, they would only be saved through faith.
By faith, of course.
Yeah.
Just like Abraham.
And so let's go one step further, and let's just... And by the way, the things we're talking about, because I just did it today, you're going to see that that this is the key. When you look at it, you look at it from that perspective, but when you look at it from the New Testament view looking back, you always look at it from an elect and non-elect. There were Gentiles that were elect and Gentiles that were non-elect.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the ones that were given the faith so that they could live... They could have that law. They had that law in their heart, and they were able to act upon it.
Yeah, what I was
able to yield to.
What he was trying to say in Romans 5 is that the Jews at this point were holding the Jews in Rome, more specifically, were holding the law. We have the law that makes us more important. Paul says no. Everyone had the law.
Yeah, right.
Everyone's guilty by the law.
Yeah, but see, you know what you've done. Here's what you didn't do. See, Paul was telling them, and he goes a little further up here, in a little further in Romans, and he says it. The law, at that particular point in time, was already nailed to the cross.
Yeah.
No, but what I'm saying is, we're talking at the time before the cross.
Yeah.
So there is a difference.
Yeah, the death reigned from Adam and Moses, as it says in 14.
Yeah.
Okay, but the sin isn't imputed to them. That's what it says in the next verse. They're not imputed the same way to that sin because there's no law. So if you don't have any imputed sin, you're not responsible to it. You're just going to have the consequence of physical death, not spiritual death. Unless you don't have the conscience written in your...
Written on your heart. Otherwise, you can't be found guilty if you never knew the law, but it was written on your heart.
So you know what we're doing here. We're going a little too deep.
Yeah.
So let's just... Because there's a lot of people here that this is way over their heads, like mine. No. Let's just slow it down a little bit, okay? Let's just say this, that if you got a law, if God puts the Bible says God puts his law on men's hearts, and there was a 25-year period, was the only law that was there was the law that God put on their hearts. And God gave people the faith to believe that law. Now, they may not have had the same law as this in the same shape and fashion, but they pleased God with it. What does Genesis 6 say? And Noah was a righteous man. Now, he didn't get to be a righteous man because he read somewhere what he should do. He got to be a righteous man because he knew in his heart what he should do, and he did it. And God gave him the faith to do it. In the same way that in Israel, not all Israel, and you made that comment, not all Israel was Israel. There were many Jews. I mean, look at the book of Judges, that there were Jews, God just punished them and killed them. And because they just had a rebellious heart. But there was always an elect. There was always people that he gave the faith to. Remember this, salvation has always been the same. Except in Genesis 3, that was where the free will came in. God, man was really tested. What are you going to do? This is right, this is wrong. You make the decision. And God let him do it on his own, okay? But after that, all faith that we have, and all the faith of the law that's in our heart, the law that's not the law, but the spirit that's in this book, everything, we're given the faith to believe, we're given the faith to live that way. Ezekiel 37, 26, 27 says, I will put a new heart in you, I'll put my spirit in you, and I will cause you to walk in my commandments. And that's exactly what he did in the Old Testament. Nothing has changed. It's all the same. Salvation has always been the same. It's been by God and God alone.
Yeah, this is not only bring up, say, Moses and Abraham. You have, what was his name? Who lived?
How about
Salem?
All the judges?
The guy lived in Salem. He lived in.
Oh yeah, Lot. No, not Lot. I know who you're talking about.
Melchizedek.
Okay.
By the order of Melchizedek. I mean, this is not a Jew or a Christian or anything. This is a guy living amongst a bunch of pagans, and Abraham looked at him as a holy man. And he's mentioned as the order that Christ is the descendant of the
You had to say that. You just had to say that.
Yeah, that's
because there is a train of thought that says that Melchizedek was really Christ. He had no father, he had no mother, he had no beginning, and he had no end.
It's possible he was a pre-incarnation,
so what happens,
but there isn't
is
enough information about him
to make such a claim.
But you know, there really is a good reference to whoring the loins. Abraham was giving him, an offering because essentially Melchizedek was his priest, and so was Jesus his priest. There's a lot of metaphors there. Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily make him a pre-incarnation, but I can't say that he's not either, because it's a paragraph out of a whole.
So the thing to remember is this. This is what you guys should remember out of all of this. You should remember this, that when somebody says to you, well, what about those people living in the South American rainforests? They have the law of God written on their heart. They're going to either choose to obey it or not. And it's up to him to judge them according to that law. We'd have nothing to do with that. I live good with that, by the way. Same thing with it. Or there's going to be a guy, an evangelist, is going to be going somewhere else, and the plane's going to get blown off course, and the pilot's going to run out of gas, or the propeller's going to fall off. The plane's going to, he's going to crash. He's going to land in a palm tree, then in a bunch of mud. And when he looks up, there's going to be this guy who's been obeying God's law, and he's going to speak in his language, and he's going to give him the gospel, and he's going to get saved. If you're an elect, I don't care where you are. I don't care if there's a law or not a law. You're going to heaven because God has got a people. What does the Bible say in Ephesians 1:4? That's a key verse. Ephesians 1:4. That should tell you everything. And it doesn't talk about the law. It doesn't talk about verbal law, written law. It simply makes one grand statement. What's it say, Tom?
Ephesians 1:4.
Yep.
Just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we would be holy and blameless before him.
Boom. Everyone, whether they were in 2,500 years with no law, or from the law to this very day, every single elect person was chosen by God, period. And how that process happened, We look in Romans and it says that the Gentiles have a law in their heart, and if they evade it, God gave them the faith to obey it. To this day, if you're a born-again Christian, God is giving you the faith you need to obey him and walk in his statutes. That's why I told somebody today at breakfast, I said, he says, I can't do this and I can't. I said, no, you're right, you can't. You're not empowered to do that. You're not empowered to have the faith because God hasn't given it to you yet. But he is stirring you because you're talking about spiritual things. That's the distinction. You're being stirred. Now, what you do with that and what God does with that, that's between you and him. I can't do anything. I'm just sitting here trying to tell you what's going on in your life because you're telling me you're concerned about death, where you're going to go, how it's going to happen, da 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 da. Those are spiritual things. Those are not human things. Those are spiritual things. And so, whatever God does to him, okay, because he's heard the gospel, whatever God is doing it with this person, then that's up between him and God. What we have to know as Christians, we have to know what God says. And God says that he's put his laws in all of man's heart. And some Gentiles, that is outside of Israel, some Gentiles act on that because he gives them the faith to act on that, and they'll be as much in heaven as Arthur and me. It's that simple. That's what you need to remember. Because we have an elect and we have a non-elect, right? Yes.
A quick footnote too would be that because Christ came and fulfilled the law in completion, if you receive the gospel and you don't receive Christ, you don't receive the knowledge of the law that you now have a responsibility to, and you do not have your conscience to guide you apart from Christ.
Correct.
You're still held to Christ as the final standard.
That's it.
And if you don't choose that, you're condemned, because now you've been given the full responsibility of the law because he fulfilled it to the completion.
And the verse that backs that up is 1 Corinthians 2:14 and 2:16. The natural man discerneth not the things of God, for they are spiritually discerned, and neither can he know them. In other words, if you have that law written, and everybody has it, if you have that law written, and you know how you know that? Another reason, because if you talk to somebody about spiritual things, the first thing they like to say is, well, I'm a good person. I'm a good person. I'm a moral person. Why wouldn't I go to heaven? That's the law. That's the law inside of them. They know there's something, and they're trying to claim it, but they're trying to claim it without Christ, and you can't do that. Not in this dispensation. Yeah, I saw a hand.
John. I just saw the verse in Romans chapter 2, verse 13. For not the hearers of the law are just in the sight of God, but the doers of the law
are justified. There you go.
The whole point of 5 is to say, stop touting the law. That's not going to save you.
Right. Right. Okay. Do we have everybody got a gist of it? Right? And you know the key is Ephesians 1:4. Whenever all else fails, Ephesians 1:4. That's your bailout verse. that sums it up. Where do we leave off, Doreen? I didn't bring a pen. Didn't bring a pen? What's up with that?
I think we left off just at the bottom of page 8, even though we handed out page 9.
Okay. Okay. Well, then I'll stop at we'll stop at B at page 8. We'll start there next time. All right, good. Isn't it fascinating? Right?
Yeah, we're definitely still discussing B.
Yeah, we are. You're right. And you see, one of the things, one of the